This episode is brought to you by NordVPN. Listen up, nerds. No. Good evening, Mr. and Mrs. America, from border to border and coast to coast and all the ships at sea.
What?
Hello, friends. Do you have a computer? Of course you do, because it's not 1987. Hell, you're listening to this on some kind of computer right now. But do you have a VPN?
Oh,
what's a VPN, you ask? Well, my friend, a VPN is a virtual private network and it offers two key benefits: enhanced privacy and security online. But VPNs do a lot more than that. VPNs shield your IP address, change your browsing location, and make online life easier. It's all about safety and security, my friends. But like everything else in life, it's also about watching TV. Don't let your paid subscriptions go to waste. I use NordVPN to access my home content while I'm traveling. Wink, wink. Plus, secure your connection on public Wi-Fi in airports, hotels, cafes, anywhere you go when you're traveling. There's over 6,300 servers in 111 countries, and you can find a nearby server for the best VPN speeds. NordVPN is easy to use. Connect with one click or enable auto-connect for zero-click protection. And it's got amazing speed. NordVPN is one of the fastest VPNs out there. And with just one NordVPN account, you can use it on 6 devices. It supports every major platform: Windows, Android, iOS, macOS, Linux, even Android TV. I think those are all real. Don't miss out on all the awesome benefits for using a VPN. Go to nordvpn.com/ifanboy today for a risk-free 30-day money-back guarantee. The link's in the show notes. Once again, that's nordvpn.com/ifanboy.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. You ever feel like you really need to get something off your chest? This is like a real thing. Like, if you're mad, if you're upset, if there's something going on, like there's often for me an idea. Maybe it's a wrong. Maybe it's a moment. It's an injustice. It's something that just you keep going on and on, over and over in your mind about it, and like that can create anger and resentment or shame, whatever it is. And very often, I have found, I am not a therapist, I have found that when you let it out, when you give it voice, when you say it out loud, sometimes it makes you feel better because you've expressed it. And sometimes it makes you realize like, oh, this is not a big deal, but it's been stuck in my head. So you give voice to those things, and it can make you feel a lot better. And shock of all shocks, therapy is one of those things that can help you do that. It can help you be able to say those things in a place where you don't need to worry about the repercussions of it, work your way through it, figure out coping skills, how to get around it, you know, find ways to deal with that stuff instead of letting it fester. If you are thinking of starting therapy, if anything I said sounds familiar, you're like, oh, maybe my life would be a little better if I could deal with that kind of thing, you should give BetterHelp a try. It's fully online. It is convenient, flexible. It is suited to your schedule. That's the idea. That's what they're going for. You can fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist. That's a big deal. You can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. That personal connection, I believe, to be super important. Again, I'm not a professional. Get it off your chest with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/ifanboy today. You get 10% off your first month. That is BetterHelp, HELP.com/ifanboy. This is the iFanboy Pick of the Week podcast, episode 456, brought to you by iFanboy listeners just like you. Welcome to the iFanboy Pick of the Week podcast, episode 456. I am Josh Flanagan, and with me is Paul Montgomery.
Hello.
And that's all. There's no one else here. We're just doing
the two of us.
You and I.
We can make it if we try.
No one wants this.
No one.
No one wants this even a little bit.
Say the same.
Somewhere, Connor Kilpatrick is just gripping his ears in horror.
Horror.
Connor's at a wedding.
Horcrux.
Jacob Horseman. He's at a wedding, apparently. It's a 9-day affair. Apparently, it's a long wedding. It's in the desert. I don't know. He's not here. That's all I know. And you know what? Last week Connor and I did it. This time, you know, we're finding out that I'm the anchor. That's what I guess we're finding out here.
It only takes two to tango.
or get pregnant.
We are iFanboy. We like comic books. Every week we read a bunch of comic books, and one of us picks the best book that they read. We call that the Big of the Week. We talk about it here on the podcast. We talk about the other books from the week, some other stuff. Some things will come up. We'll talk about some. There'll be some questions from you, the listener. Not all of you, the collective you. An example of you. Before we get going, we're going to talk about what happens in those books and how the art in the books is the greatest thing that my eyes have ever laid on. And that might be a spoiler. So if you haven't read the books or seen the greatest thing that my eyes have ever seen, then A, what's wrong with you? And B, come back later after you have, if that's like a thing you're worried about. But you know.
Well, that's not so much of a spoiler this week, because just saying that it was a really pretty book that got the pick, there were a lot of pretty books this week. This is a very stunning looking week. There's a lot of different kinds of gorgeous this week in the world of comics. And the one I chose was particularly pretty, though, because it was drawn by John Paul Leone. It's Detective Comics number 35. I almost missed this one. I'd seen all the preview images that were going up, and there was, John Paul Leone, Batman, that's going to look really cool. But you mentioned it on Facebook, and I was like, oh, yeah, that's out. So I need to make sure to read that, and I did, and it was delightful, and it's one of those great little Batman stories.
Yeah, I had not been reading Detective.
Mm-hmm.
This was a Connor thing. Connor had sent out an email. He doesn't do this that often. He's more, he'd rather let me miss something and then ridicule me for it on the show.
Mm-hmm.
But this time he was like, hey, John Paul Leone is drawing Detective Comics this week. You know. Know that, and I was like, whatever.
Get,
you know?
Some.
And I even kind of downloaded it reluctantly. I was like, it's fine. I don't want to. There's so many comics. I don't want to do another one. And I started off, and I thought, you know, I'm sure it'll be fine. Whatever. I don't know. I hadn't thought about John Paul Leone. I know I like him. He's fine. He's good. And as I started, I was like, it's pretty good. It's fine. And about halfway through, I was like, this is amazing.
It's really good.
Yeah, and I mean, there's other things about it, but please continue.
This is written by Ben Percy. I think it's going to be a two-parter, I believe. Mm-hmm. And I don't know a whole lot about Ben Percy. He's a novelist. He's also written for Esquire, according to his Twitter bio. Nice little story. Nice little Batman tale, and it's just rendered astoundingly pretty by John Paul Leone with great colors by Dave Stewart.
Mm-hmm. That didn't hurt.
That did not hurt. And so this involves, Alfred is like, you know, Master Bruce, you got to get out of town. You need a vacation. So you got to go on the private plane. But there's something going on at the airport, something big going on at the airport. A plane crashes into the Gotham airport, and it's this huge spectacle. And going over it, pouring over it panel by panel, all the little details, and it's horrifying. And it's not necessarily grisly, the plane crash itself, but it's violent in terms of the scale and the destruction of it. And if you're familiar with John Paul Leone's work, it's not photorealistic,
no,
but it's highly detailed.
I don't even know if detail is the right thing, because it's kind of there, but it's a lot of sort of impressionistic detail, I suppose. Like it's not unlike like a little bit of Chris Somney kind of thing, or it's like a more specific Chris Somney.
I would think of Michael Lark.
Michael Lark, you know what though? But it's simpler than Michael Lark in terms of you know, like how much detail he's putting. If you look at the faces. Another one that springs to mind is what's his name? With Kirkman, the outcast. Come on.
Oh, we suck.
We do suck.
I'm rusty. I've got
and
ring
he did
rust
Northlanders for a long time, and he's very good.
Googling it.
I know. But it's sort of like that, where like it kind of looks photorealistic until you look closer and you realize, no, there's really actually not a lot there. His shapes are excellent. His rendering of sort of the plane
as a setup.
As Paul as a setup, exactly.
Yeah.
As the plane as it crashes through
I mean, that is fairly detailed, but like he doesn't, you know, like you can see the ink, you know, on the page. Like, you know, it's like
really heavy line.
Yeah, but like you can actually see like with like the brush marks, you know, the things like that. Like he's not afraid to put that down. And it makes me think of it's the comic book equivalent of, you know, when somebody's playing acoustic guitar and you can hear the finger on the fret, the scratch, the move. Like I always like that. It's very tactile. And I think that's something I like about John Paul Leon. He lays down a lot of ink, but he stops just short of overdoing it. But it's right on the line of being sort of too dark and too splotchy at times.
Mm-hmm.
But even if you look this scene of the plane crashing through the terminal and then the next page is just a bunch of close-ups of the parts of the plane, like the wheels going through the ground and the engine and wing taking down the scaffolding that's holding up the building. And then you get to the next page and there's a shot. There's a shot of the fuselage of the plane as it sort of stopped and things are smoking. And you look at that line. It's not like a straight, you know, it's sketchy. But doesn't seem that way. Like he has this way of making things that are clearly art look very grounded and realistic, I suppose, if that makes sense. And then when you look at his Batman's pared right the hell down.
Mm-hmm.
It's not a lot to that in a good way.
It's a man in a bat suit.
Yeah, it is exactly.
A lot of times Batman is depicted. I mean, like, you know, at the other end of the spectrum, you think of like like Jock or something, and he's like a living shadow, you know.
Yeah.
And this is without going too far into the Adam West realm, this is a dude.
Right on that line.
Yeah.
No, you're absolutely right.
And so it lends itself to this. I mean, it's weird to say a smaller scale Batman story when it involves an airplane going through an airport and opening up that airplane and finding what looks like mummies, you know, like people who have the corpses who look like they didn't just die, like didn't die in the crash. They look like, you know, you just opened up, you know, a crypt and went inside. And he talks about them being entombed in there. But it is, compared to the really heightened manic Batman rogues and the over the top stories that we've seen over the years, this reminded me of going back to one of our favorite runs, the Paul Dini detective run.
I felt very much the same way.
Where it really is appropriate that this is Detective Comics, you know?
Yeah, it's really nice. I think in contrast to Snyder and Capullo, and again, there's nothing wrong with that, but in contrast to that year-long, huge, like everything in Gotham is affected, this is a mystery. It's a detective mystery. And he goes in and he's got to spar with the cops a little bit, and he's just a man, you know, sort of trying to figure that out. And it was really a nice change of pace. And I, you know, I wasn't even looking forward to the story. And anyway, I didn't know who Ben Percy was. By the way, very accomplished writer and a contributing editor to Esquire. Mm-hmm. Several novels, 2 years younger than me, so he can go fuck himself. I'm kidding. But like he did a nice story. You know, and that was the part of it that surprised me. Art's, you know, great. It's great. But, you know, the other side of it was like, oh, this is the kind of Batman story I haven't read in a while. Totally sort of grounded Batman, you know, working on a big scale, but just, you know, he's just a person. I really liked that.
This is a study in contrast, I think, because, you know, you have that spectacle of the airplane going through, and that's like, you know, a big spread or whatever. And it feels big, but it's a really kind of minimalist script. Mm-hmm. It's very pared down and kind of restrained, and I like that quite a bit. It's sort of a no frills kind of story, and like, you know, the bad guy is a very simple setup. It's I mean, there's a cool hook and a mystery by the end of it, and Batman's in something of a pickle that, you know, they've got like, what was it, 8 hours or something, and you know, Magnus Magnuson is a terrorist who wants to punish America because of, you know, the like all of the different profiteering in war in the Middle East, going after oil and lithium specifically. And he says he's basically an eco-terrorist, and it lays it out. You know, he's not monologuing really. He's just laying it out very simply. And that's something we don't see a lot in Batman, especially because you're talking about the Joker and the Riddler and Scarecrow and everything's all these huge, crazy machinations. And while this has something of a, what looks like a supernatural twist to it with these corpses in the airplane, this big sort of, you know, Twilight Zone kind of mystery to it, in comparison to what we're used to, it's just minimal and elegant. And so I was really, it was sort of like this was, it took me by surprise. I wasn't expecting this to be the pick. You know, if you gave me the list of books, you know.
No, I kind of didn't expect
that
either.
High profile things. And, but I was like, this is really different. And it took me by surprise. So that's how it ended up in the top slot this week.
Well, all right. I thought I was a little surprised that, that you picked it, but kind of not.
I don't. I mean, just looking through that crash sequence, and mm-hmm. you know, even just like subtle things, like you know, the woman ordering her really involved coffee drink. It just speaks to, like, the decadence of, you know, an entitlement of you know, the stereotypical American, mm-hmm. and so that it's a really interesting kind of parable in that way, but it's told very simply, as the best parables are.
Yeah. I was happy.
It was a nice craft.
Yeah. Yeah. And it just was like, oh, this is a nice Batman story. It's a sort of antidote to a lot of DC. Mm-hmm. Not even that it's bad, just a sort of other side of things. So it's cool.
Mm-hmm.
I'm glad that you enjoy. I'm pleased for you.
I'm pleased for me too.
Now, let's just get this out of the way. It's apparently Thor's mother. Sorry, yeah. I guess was that the spoiler? Was that the thing? Because it was pretty obvious. Thor number one came out. This is the She-Thor that everyone... Is that okay? Is that sexist?
Lady Thor.
Lady, you know. Thor. Mrs. Thor. Now, I guess this is... You tell me. This is a lot of stuff that preceded this happened in the... What was the Watcher book? Original Sin?
There's a bit in Original Sin, yeah, with Nick Fury and all these whisperings of revelations and mm-hmm. whatever he said to Thor, to the Odin son, rendered him unworthy.
But we pretty quickly find out in this book, ain't nobody worthy.
Ain't nobody.
So worthy.
Not even the
Allfather himself.
Not even the Allfather. Not even Volstagg. Mm-hmm. Nobody can lift that thing. It's like the sword and the stone.
Yeah.
And so Thor has to go back to the, you know, the weaponry, the weapons vault, and Yarnbjorn got the axe.
Yarnbjorn.
And so we're now with this new status quo, we've got the unworthy Thor and some marital strife between the Lockhorns themselves, mm-hmm. Odin and Frigga. Thor's mother.
Freya or Frigga?
Isn't it Frigga? It was Frigga. Anyways.
Frey, well, it's F-R-E-Y-J-A. Freya. Okay. Freya. See, I would pronounce the J like a Y because Bjorn, fjords, and whatnot.
Freya. Okay.
We'll I don't know. That.
Anyways, here's the other thing. Here's the other story about this book. So, so if you're expecting a whole lot of this new female Thor.
This is an excellent point.
You kind of got everything in the preview pages that they've put out, if you're paying attention to those. And she just pops up at the end. But I don't know if it's Thor's mother, but what I tend to agree with you in that speculation, just in the setup of this issue, because there's so much attention paid to her return.
Yeah, and there's a line where she's like, it was just like, I'm looking for it, where basically they're like, we've done everything we can, or no, it's time you remembered your place in the world, and they close in, and she's like, yes, perhaps it is, which I read exactly like, I'm going to stalk Lenny and Carl. Like, it's a classic Simpsons line is what it is. I mean, but it was just like, oh.
Yeah, and so there's that would open up like a big conflict between her and Thor, and then her
That's
and
nice.
Odin as well.
Not Thor so much. I don't know. I really like Thor, like the boy who's lost his way. Like he mm-hmm. just can't deal. And then as soon as I saw her at the end, I was like, oh, that's got to be the mom. So I looked, I go back and I looked at sort of the design of her headdress and everything.
Right.
You know, she's kind of got the Thor wings going on her little helm or whatever is before, you know, before she picks up the, like, it's not, you know, other than the gigantic bouffant, the Marie Antoinette bouffant.
You know, so it could be, you know, it could be a red herring.
It could be,
but just in terms of, it just seems like a Chekhov's gun kind of thing, that it would be her. But anyways, it's a brief appearance. So we're really looking for Thor number 2, and hopefully we'll get some more details.
You're right. It's too obvious.
Yeah.
It feels like it's way too obvious that that's a thing.
We'll see. But
I mean, she's got something to do with it, obviously. But
I mean, all the ingredients here I really like. And, you know, so even though we didn't get sort of the full meal here, I think the setup is really great. And
it was very much that cold open before the credits issue.
And so the other question with this, and I think one of the big stories about this issue is Russell Dowderman. Doesn't look exactly like what he was doing with Cyclops, which looked great.
Yeah.
I think this looks even better.
Well, he's got Matthew Wilson coloring him, which does not help. And also we got to do sharks with freaking lasers, so that was good.
And Esad Ribic is that's huge boots to fill.
They're massive.
That's a big hammer to have to heft.
Yeah.
Really blew me away. I thought it was a gorgeous book.
I think it's really nice, and I think it was a good direction to go in.
It's one of those things where it's like it doesn't look. I mean, if you put the two of them together, their line work is totally different. But I think the coloring helps with a sense of continuity.
Well, Matthew Wilson didn't color the rest of it.
But I think what they're doing with the colors seems like there's a sense of continuity between the two.
Yeah.
I don't think it looks different. I think it adds to
it, more so than even, I think Ron Garney did some of the fill-in issues on the other one, and I didn't feel like they fit in as well.
Yes.
Or at least that maybe they weren't, I don't know, like it didn't feel like it was in the same mold. And because this is a new direction, they can sort of change style, but, you know, keep some of the flavor.
Yeah,
I
think it's like I think it's a variations on a theme kind of thing. It's definitely a different artist, but I think it's in the same, you know, overall feel.
I like the idea of making Volstagg as ridiculously obese as possible. I really appreciate that.
And it's one of those things that they really can't capture in the movie.
No, not even close.
Like, well, I mean, even if you tried, like, it just, you can't do it. It's just, he's got to be crazy huge.
I actually think they should have done that with CGI. I think it would have been funnier.
Do it with,
like, really make him gigantic. And that way, when he moves and does everything, it's all the more impressive.
It would have to be CGI. Like, if you did it in practical, it just would look great.
Yeah, yeah. Well, no.
Anyways, this is a tangent, but. But no, I think this is a fun new chapter. I think it's a cool direction, and I like the family dynamics in it. Great start.
It was a good issue. It left me wanting a little more.
Okay,
that's what I would say.
I would say it's promising.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Totally. I think at this point, like, you know, Jason Aaron just did one of the best Thor runs that I've ever read in my life. So you got a lot of leash. You're fine. You know, like. Make that code, do what you have to. It's fine. Mm-hmm. No problem. Moving on. American Vampire number 5 came out, and second cycle number 5.
Second cycle.
Yeah. Regardless, it's post-break. And the thing about this one is that it was, I don't think half, but of a large portion of it was prose. This is basically we're getting away from Sweets and I haven't thought of the names in a while. And what's her name?
Pearl.
There you go. Yeah. And we're with this other guy who's looking for a site where there was some sort of archaeological dig. And the whole time we're flashing back to the diary journal of this miner, I guess, who had gone to work on this site. And I'll be honest with you, it was about 11:20 when I started reading this, and I knew that it was going to be half prose, and I recognized that my little baby has been waking up sometime around 4:30. So if you want to do the math on that, I was like, oh, come on. And I stopped reading it for a second. I put it away. I read something else. Because for me, historically, when I'm trying to haul through a shitload of comic books and you get to a big old like prose page, that's death. I hate that.
Mm.
However, I went back and I was like, no, I'm gonna give it a shot. I'm going to read it. And I found the prose to be very compelling.
We started off as a prose writer.
Well, obviously. But I think it worked well in this because basically we're flashing back to the 1850s, which is kind of interesting. So you're writing in that style, and it was kind of illustrated. There was a little story about how it was illustrated. I enjoyed it. It was a good story, and it sort of at the end left us, you know, with a next. And is this Dracula? Is that who this guy is? Is this this world's Dracula or his equivalent, like King of the Vampires, super badass vampire guy?
I don't know.
Who was chasing them in the last arc, I think, more or less. If it's not Dracula, it's sort of like that level vampire, the one they're all scared of.
He gets this creepy imagery by the end with this woman who's pregnant with not a baby, but something.
That's the worst picture I've seen drawn.
Man, it's terrifying. And she's like, she's up on these stakes, you know, and upside down. And so the belly is hanging down. And it's just this swollen thing. And then when he finds, like, you know, the remnants of it, and there's, like, it looks like leather hanging from it, but maybe it's, like, her flesh. I don't know. But it's a sort of classic horror trope. It's like almost an Edgar Allan Poe kind of thing of the descent into madness. So you're reading a diary.
Yes.
And then as you go through, the journal entries get shorter and more clipped and more frantic. And then by the end, you can tell that this guy has lost his mind and he's repeating himself and stuff. And that's always fun. And I love the prose. I read Scott Snyder's book, Voodoo Heart, which is really cool. And of course, there's a bunch of, you know, horror stories in there and or just like creepy stories. And so if you liked this, you should check out his short story collection. I thought this was really fun. And I like the art, too.
Yeah, I agree.
And I liked the presentation of the prose. Like, it's not like a lot of times it'll just be, you know, like Courier New typed out, you know, and like that was the classic one that Grant Morrison Batman issue that was just a lot of prose and people like they were up in arms about it. Like, oh, what is this? This isn't a comic. Mm-hmm. I think the balance was right here, and there were great illustrations throughout, and it was easy, you know, to read. And
literally the only thing was I really didn't like the font choice. For whatever reason, I found it hard to read on an iPad.
Okay.
And like it's that fake like handwriting.
On your iPad too?
Yeah, which is not
on my iPad with Retina display. It was pretty gorgeous.
I bet it read pretty well.
Read pretty well.
Yeah.
Looking pretty good.
I mean, literally for like, you know, my problem with this is always that it slows me down. And that's like my own little issue. Like,
when you've got a stack of comics and you're, you know, reading through them, and especially when we're trying to read stuff in advance of a show, like when you hit prose, like it sometimes feels like a brick wall. Like,
oh, it's
because you're not in that mode. We like reading books, you know, we like reading novels and stuff.
Exactly. Yeah,
it's just you're in a different frame of mind when you get to it.
Yeah. You expect a certain speed,
expect a certain rhythm and everything. Yeah.
But it was good. Like I really did enjoy it, and I wasn't like, ugh, it was annoying. I thought it would be, but then it wasn't. Mm-hmm. So it was good, and I like the art change, and you know, I like this world because you can sort of pop around to different places and see different things, and there's a gigantic, endless histories that you can put in there, and good stuff.
And speaking of comics with prose in them, Fade Out number 2 came out, and I believe only in regular old comic size issues and not the big magazine format.
I didn't get a big giant one.
I didn't get one though. So, but anyways, I liked this one just as much, if not better, than the first. This continues to just be, I mean, the three of us, we love old Hollywood. And I think, you know, that's how we got swept into, what's the TV show one? The live TV one that Fraction's putting out.
Satellite Sam?
Satellite Sam, there you go.
This is This is the week we don't remember things.
This is the week we don't remember. There's something going on. It's the fumes from your iPad is what's happening.
It's Connor's
seeping
iPad.
Seeping through the microphone.
Let's not, you mess the joke up too.
I messed it up.
Connor's generation one iPad is the, I'm just saying mine's a little lower the resolution. Although iOS 8 has definitely slowed it down a little on app launch. I've definitely noticed that.
Okay.
Sorry. Anyway, about the fade out.
Soldiering on. This is really cool. I love this idea that you've got this this Hollywood big shot actor who refuses to play the parts of the movie where he has to wear bandages on his face. So he has a double, a stand-in, who is supposed to be his character with bandages on. So this guy is just on set all the time with bandages wrapped around his face, so he looks like the Invisible Man. And that's what you're seeing on the cover. And I liked that sort of that metaphor of our hero who last time I said he looked like Jeff Parker, I was wrong. It's Bruce Timm is who he looks like now that I think about it with the glasses. Mm-hmm. I think so.
Maybe.
There's something about that face. It looks like Bruce Timm to me. He talks about, I wish that I could go into, you know, the makeup room and get those bandages and wrap my head in bandages and be invisible. And there's, you know, all these allusions to, you know, the Blacklist and this idea that he's a screenwriter, but he was in the war and he sort of lost his nerve. And he says, whatever made me a writer was taken from me in the war. And so he can't write anymore. And this other guy who is banned from writing is laying on the floor, totally drunk and dictating these stories that our guy is typing up.
For being a communist.
For being communist.
He was blacklisted, yeah, which is a thing that happened. I think overall, this issue really let us get to know the characters a lot more.
Yeah.
Set the playing field out. I think this arrangement between, I'm looking for his name. Main character.
Charlie
and Gil, his best friend.
Fucking,
you know,
Gil.
The way that they arranged for themselves to keep working is brilliant. I really found that was super interesting. I thought the studio boss character, Mr. Thursby, I thought the way that he was acting was really fun and interesting. You know, not fun for the characters.
And how horrible he is, yeah.
yeah. No, I love that stuff, though. Like, old studio bosses, sure. I mean, they're fascinating people.
It was that Hitchcock thing where he molds...
Yeah.
Starlets into what he wants them to be, to the point that this woman, this actress who was murdered in the first issue, is buried, and he's paying for the funeral and everything, and he uses her stage name on the tombstone.
Yeah, and
which is a stylized tombstone.
He's upset that it wasn't the way it was supposed to be, and you know, I liked the way you have to reshoot it, and you've only got 14 days. It's just, he's like, well, how do we do that? You're a genius. That's what I pay you for. Reading real stories about that is really fun. So it's fun to see what he'll do sort of in this sort of dramatic, fictitious, way.
Mm-hmm. And also when you think of noir, Hollywood noir, you think about shadows and darkness and stuff. But what's really interesting about this book, and I noticed it more in this issue, there's a lot going on with light. Mm-hmm. And the way light falls on characters, and looking at that page where they're at the funeral in towards the beginning, and as you go down towards the group around the tombstone, it actually gets lighter. It's darker up top, and there's this sort of like dappled light effect, like light going through the trees.
If you notice, like Betty Breitweiser on colors, like her colors bleeding all over the place.
Mm-hmm.
Like there's these. Almost these little pastels that are just sort of brushed in the middle of stuff, and they don't stay in the lines necessarily. Like she's painting in I don't know, little squares of everything. It's a really unusual use of color.
It's like
it works nicely.
It's like anomalies that would only get picked up on like camera.
Yeah,
and so there's these weird sort of lighting effects, and like it looks like almost like a section of the panel is overexposed.
Yeah,
it's just like whiter. Or there's like that pale blue. It's just interesting kind of ghosting effect.
It's soft,
mm-hmm.
but it's because the colors aren't like blasting. It's not Technicolor, but it's really interesting. If you look at sort of the palettes that are going around here, like color that I can't explain why it works, but it does. Mm-hmm. And I think that's great. It's really a thing.
and a little essay on Fatty Arbuckle in the back,
which is super interesting. And I did not read it, but I'm going to go back and read it because I know that story a little bit, but I want to be refreshed on it. And it's very
true Hollywood stories. And
yeah, is that the thing? That was where they did it?
No, it was. Oh, I forget. Whatever. This is the episode where we can't remember things.
Yeah, I don't know. I think they did do a true Hollywood story.
There was one that was like older Hollywood
crimes.
That's
when those were interesting and not just, you know. Yeah. I don't know. I still haven't seen it in 15 years. So it doesn't really matter. Finally, I wanted to just talk about Black Widow really quick.
Sure.
We haven't talked about this in a little bit. Mm-hmm. I mean, right away, Nathan Edmondson writing, but Phil Noto is just really good. And I keep sort of thinking I don't want to read this book. And then I start reading, I'm like, nah, it's a pretty good book. Like, I'm pretty impressed by it. And then in this, I kind of wanted to bring it up because X-23 is in it.
Yeah.
And it's occurring to me that people are doing really interesting things with that character. Over in Avengers Undercover. Was she in that? Yes. She was in Avengers Arena, at least. Was she in Undercover?
She was in Avengers Arena, yeah.
Yeah, okay. And then over in All New X-Men. She's this character who not too long ago was kind of considered a stupid joke kind of thing. And I like her a lot. And
yeah, it's another derivative character. It's
yeah. But the version of her in this is different than the one that's going on in the other book. That does not bother me. It's not a complaint about continuity. I like that. Like, she's this super capable, angry, but self-aware. Like, you know, she's full of rage. She's got most of Wolverine's competence, it's really, really interesting. I really enjoyed it. I like Natalia in this a lot. I like how she's a little older and she's, you know, pretty seasoned and she's sort of caught between all these different things. It's a good book. It's so good looking.
There's just great silent sequences.
Yes.
Of a lot of action going on, and I think part of that is the scripting. It's really tight. Like, let's have her rappel down a wall, and you know, and then burst through a window, and here's the guy with a gun, and all this stuff, and then Noto's layouts are just really nice. Like, there's some pages in here that would be great to have.
Except I think he does everything.
But, it's got this nice, and you know, for a digital thing, like, it doesn't look, you know, it looks organic. Oh. It looks totally watercolor.
He was a guy when he first showed up on my radar, you know, like, you'd see him do covers and you think those covers are amazing. But then when he did interiors, it didn't quite click for a little bit. And mm-hmm. I think he's got it down now. Oh, definitely. It's real, real nice looking. Anywho, let's see, 11 issues. Chances are there's a trade of that. If I were you, I'm going to go out and I'm going to go to ifanboy.com/Amazon and I'm going to use that link. And maybe you should buy the Black Widow trade. Maybe that's a thing you should do. Or you should look up Phil Noto's name and see what other stuff he's done. Because he's a heck of an artist. And if you do that and you buy something from Amazon through our link, then you will be helping the site out directly. Won't cost you anything. That comes out of Amazon's cut. And, you know, holidays are coming up. So, bookmark that. Make do. Have that be a thing. Or if you want to be a little more direct, you can always go to ifanboy.com/registration and you can donate cold hard cash directly to the iFanboy organization. If you enjoy what we are doing and putting the time in every single week to read the books and put up the show and make sure we're hosting a place to talk about it and keep the community going, we really appreciate that. Of course, it's either $3 a month or you can do $30 a year, which would save you a little bit if you want to do the math on that. Or you can just donate whatever it is you feel like, if that's a thing that you feel strongly about. And of course, we appreciate that. You guys are the best for doing those kinds of things.
You are the best.
Yes. Thank you. All of you are the
best.
Love
you.
Mm-hmm. I love classic Marvel comics. Maybe DC did it too, where the cover is blacked out and who is the next whatever.
Sure.
There's a silhouette. And this Captain America issue, who is the next Captain America, which was no secret of any kind, because we all knew it was going to be Sam Wilson. But I really like Sam Wilson, so I'm totally cool with that. But I really dug this sort of cover on this. And basically this whole issue, because we all did know, like, it was one long meeting of all of the Avengers just bitching at each other about the lack of snacks. After we got past the fighting at the beginning, but I don't remember the fighting at the beginning. I guess the big problem was that Jet was either fooled or manipulated into thinking, oh my goodness, my dad's right, and these Earthlings are awful. So she goes back to her dad, and then Steve Rogers says, "We need a new Captain America because I'm old now." And then it's Falcon in a it is a suit he's wearing. There's a costume there.
Yeah.
I can say that much about it. I don't know what I want it to look like. It's weird.
I like his costume.
I don't like the eyes.
You don't like the eyes?
No, the eyes bug me. But I get why they're there. At least it makes sort of sense.
Better than the helmet thing.
It is better than the helmet.
Anything's better than the helmet thing, yep. Really. Sometimes we gripe when you see the hand of the creator, you know, and especially the writer in a book. But I laughed uproariously when we get to the big splash pages, or it's like, y'all knew it was me. This, and he's like, and he literally says, like, you know, this is the least shocking reveal ever. And it's just, it's totally breaking the fourth wall, but it's true. And I just kind of like, I can just see Rick Remender, you know, sitting there and like, you know what, fuck it.
Yeah.
And then, you know, you get to the point where they're like, you know, just say what we're all waiting for you to say. And, you know, at the end, you get the rally cry and another splash page. And I just kind of I love the irreverence of it.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, I love the choice to have an irreverent character as Captain America. So you can tell that he is very honored to be the new Captain America and takes it seriously. But at the same time, it's sort of the Hawkeye, not Clint Barton, but Benjamin Franklin Pierce from MASH. Who's got the little bit of irreverence for the whole thing, and you know, making light of it. So, while still being a patriot in his own way, and so I like that character choice, and I continue to enjoy old man Steve Rogers, in his sweater, you know, LL Bean, you know.
I like the fact that no one would give the Vision credit for being funny. I was literally the only one who told a legitimately funny joke. I was like, that was nice. It was fun. It was like a good old sort of little romp thing. Like I said, there was those other things that happened, and I totally didn't even like.
But I think the most important things were there at the end, and you know. So, I think, you know, all these different Marvel character changes, maybe the Iron Man one aside, are pretty compelling.
Yeah.
And don't feel gimmicky to me. They feel like. It's interesting avenues for storytelling.
Listen, Tony Stark will live in all of the movies that Robert Downey Jr. does that are not about Tony Stark. Anyway, except for Zodiac.
Action Comics 35.
Yeah, yeah. This was an interesting one.
Yeah. What do you think? You added it to the list, so you tell me.
I did. Here's the thing. I really like this. I like what's going on, but I find myself, I want to be more interested than I am. But overall, if you look at the end of it, basically, you know, Clark comes back after Brainiac had put everybody to sleep. Lots of thousands of people died, and everything's kind of okay. And the question is, you know, was, do we need a Superman? You know, and Clark as himself writes a thing that like he's not really needed anymore. And then Lois writes a thing like they're going back and forth through journalism about how, you know, it doesn't matter. Like, we need Superman, the concept, and maybe he needs us.
Mm-hmm.
I thought it was very sweet.
So he writes this op-ed, and I don't know, it's kind of interesting to think about Clark Kent writing, you know, why do we need Superman anyway? And then being proud that, you know, in a way that, that Lois is writing a rebuttal to that. And think about that, it's kind of odd, you know, like a cry for help kind of thing. But let me tell you, I love bearded Clark Kent, and he's kind of mopey because all everything that went on with Brainiac, and I like this idea that you have to reset the Fortress of Solitude, and it takes 40 days because everything's biblical in the world of Superman.
Yeah.
You got to go with the 40, and start.
I didn't pick up on
anew.
That, but yeah.
But well, it's, you know, 40 is just, that's everything. It's 40 days in the desert, 40 days and nights, whatever. So
that's all I know is that's how long Josh Hartnett's not supposed to masturbate for.
Whatever happened to him? Where is he?
I don't know.
What is he doing? Is he on a
just? He just
on a TV show or something?
I don't know.
Is he on like a like an IFC TV show? Like, so I don't know about it, or like a Showtime thing?
I don't know.
Is he on Prism?
I don't know what that is.
You've never heard of Prism?
No. Anyways,
maybe they didn't have it in Maine. Anyways.
I also really like Scott Collins in this. I thought that was really nice. Mm-hmm. The part of it, he didn't seem to do the first bit, I don't think. It's good. Like it keeps me interested. But for some reason I don't think I want to read it again.
There's a lot of plot things going, like continuity things going on with, like,
that's it.
It's all the fallout from Brainiac stuff and like Lois referring to Super Doom.
I definitely have lost track of this particular continuity.
And like at one point, you know, Lois knew, you know, Clark was Superman but her brain has been wiped, and it's like all that stuff, you know, that's obnoxious that you
have
to deal
with.
Well,
and then at the same time, you know, Greg Pak's also writing Superman, Batman, and I want to like it. I cannot get myself interested in it because I have no idea what's going on.
I think the characterization is all great. It's just like
it's
fraught with this continuity stuff that I just I'm not into. And but here, so some developments I do like. I like Lana Lang and John Henry Irons. That's pretty cool. That's an interesting coupling. I like both of those characters in the way they're being depicted lately.
Mm-hmm.
It's I don't know, it's a bit of a mixed bag, but characterization is keeping me through.
Yeah, no, definitely it's good stuff, and it's worlds above what we were getting previously.
Let's talk about some plaid in the otherwise totally gorgeous Gotham Academy #1.
I know where you're going. I know where you're going at, and I have my response ready, so you may please continue.
Okay. I actually read this issue, and I did not notice that the plaid skirts are all flat.
Mm-hmm.
They're not rendered in such a way that's not how fabric behaves.
It's true.
It's I don't know how to articulate it, but it's just a layer of plaid.
And the pattern is always uniform.
It's always uniform.
That's classic comic booking.
Right.
You should be done like that. They would literally paste over the pattern on what the thing was. Shirts would be like that. It's just a thing. It's like a thing that only exists in comics, mm-hmm. and it totally doesn't bother me. I like it.
I totally didn't notice it when I read it, and then people were talking about it on Twitter this morning, and I was like, and then it was really jarring when I looked at it.
See, I think it's basically a stylistic choice at this point. What did you think of this?
I don't want to gripe about that. This is a very minor nitpick in scale things. This is really interesting, and it's just exciting to see a different tone in the Bat books. And this is just the start of it. There's going to be other things coming. Story-wise, I felt like I was missing something. Like, I should have had more familiarity with these characters.
Like there was something that came before that you didn't read?
Yeah, that was the sense I got. And maybe I missed it?
I don't know that I can speak to it, but I can tell you that I thought that it had a different kind of tone, and it feels like maybe they're going for a female audience, and I think they may have done a good job with that, but I'm not sure because I'm definitely not the target audience for this. That's what I came out of. I mean, it's very much like crime-based Harry Potter in Gotham at the school, you know, like kind of thing. It's kind mm-hmm. of what I got from it. And I think it's neat, and I wish them a great deal of success, but it's totally not for me.
Okay.
It's really great looking.
I'm going to stick with it because it's just gorgeous.
It is.
The Kershaw stuff is just nuts. And really nice colors too. And the one thing that was just weird about it, you go through this whole story and it's about the relationship between these characters and this institution. And then you get to the end and there's like a weird looking eye looking out at them through the wall. And I was like, what is this book exactly? You know, like, is it a horror book? Is it, you know, so like I'm not entirely sure what all the stakes are.
Yes. Yeah, no, I agree.
So. Because it's almost like a YA kind of thing, but it's in this larger world of Gotham, and what's the balance of like how much Batman is in this book? How much, you know, I don't know.
What's this about Guardians now?
Guardians 3000, #1. By Dan Abnett. this is really cool because he, you know, when he and Andy Lanning rebooted Guardians of the Galaxy for that great run that we always talk about that the summer's big movie was based on, he ignored the classic Guardians of the Galaxy characters and basically assembled a bunch of other characters under the banner of the Guardians of the Galaxy. So that's where you get, you know, Rocket Raccoon and Star-Lord and everybody and Gamora. And so there's all these other characters like Yondu, who's the one who did end up in the movie, although a very different version of Yondu, the Archer, and Charlie 27 and God, all the names are crazy. Charlie 27, Starhawk, who in one iteration is male, one iteration is female. Master X, I believe is his name. And there, so he decided, well, we got to give these characters their due. And it actually takes place in the year 3000. So it's a little bit Legion of Superheroes. This is a whole bunch of timey-wimey crazy stuff.
All right.
Basically, they get into a skirmish and end up all getting killed halfway through the issue. But then they wake up 30 minutes earlier and they have to relive it. But the one human girl with them named Gina remembers everything, but it's sort of like a deja vu experience. So she's like, this feels familiar. So each time they kind of do it differently. So they're fighting the Brotherhood of the Badoon, who are basically the Romulans of the year 3000 in the Marvel Universe, and the Kree are on their last legs, they're dying out. We've got sort of the Council. And in the year 3000, Gladiator is still around. You got the Kree Supreme Intelligence. You've got like a descendant, I guess, of Annihilus that's female. And they're trying to stop the Badoon, but something is going on with the time stream so that every time they make any kind of progress in their war with the Badoon, it gets rewound. So there's all kinds of time craziness, and yeah, I really dig it. The one thing that kind of bogs it down is there's a lot of space lingo and rhetoric, like future rhetoric, and since it's such a sort of confusing and jarring story to jump into, because you jump right into the battle and a lot of these characters we're not familiar with, at least in the modern day, having a lot of, you know, frack kind of lingo, it's like this added wrench to it. And so there's like this extra hurdle that you have to get over to figure out what's going on. But otherwise, I think it's really fun and I'm excited to see where it goes.
Rad. That is all the comics that we were going to talk about, but I think you've got a lot of comics talk today, I think. Let's see, we have time to do one... email. Want to do one email? Can
sure.
I pick?
Yeah, go for it.
Sean in Seoul by way of Long Island writes, I wrote to you a few years ago and asked the same question, but I want to know what's changed since then. Comics sure has. What is your favorite thing about comics fans, something the community has that is unique that you love? On the flip side, what about the comics community do you find to be their worst quality? I've been listening to you guys for years and you're standby. Thanks for doing this. So... you've just started a new comic book website, and you need to be careful about what you say. So this would be fun to see if you can dig yourself a hole.
Okay. I like that you picked this one, even though I had prepared answers for the other two.
We'll do them.
Anyway, this
is more interesting.
So this one, the negative thing is gatekeeping, I think, is... And then that all goes in with like the feeling of entitlement that I own this, mm-hmm. because it is a small community, in contrast to, you know, other kinds of fan communities, it's a smaller industry. So I think people feel like I'm the only person growing up who was really into, you know, in my neighborhood, who was, you know, really into Green Lantern comics or whatever. And now there's all these people who are big Green Lantern fans now, and you know, they're wearing the novelty rings and stuff. And this is the way Green Lantern should be. because this was mine. Because for the longest time, I was like the steward of Green Lantern, you know, growing up. I was the one who cared about it.
It has to be this way.
It has to be this way because I invested so much care and emotion into reading it.
Yeah.
And no one else did, it seems to feel like. But now that, you know, the broader internet community comes up and you become aware of all these other fans, but they're not fanning the same way that you do.
Mm.
So I think that can be a big problem. But I think what I do like, since it's a small community, I think the people who are into comics be really passionate about comics. So maybe that's the binding thing. The good and the bad is the passion. You can be passionate in a bad way, but you can really passionate in a good way and want to share it with other people. And just since this, you know, panel's website has started, a lot of the conversation on Twitter has been like, hey, you know, where should I start with, you know, this kind of book or whatever, or like this character. And we put out the call to everybody else and say, what are your recommendations? This person just finished reading Saga and they're looking for some other books to try. And everybody's, you know, calling out their favorites and stuff. And people, I think, by and large, want to share. I think it's the vocal minority that is gatekeeping and wants it to be a certain way. But they can be so aggressive that that's the thing that rises to the top and people notice. Mm-hmm. But on the day to day, I think people want to help other people find, you know, they know that it can be confusing, that the spine numbers don't always make sense. And, you know, where do I start? And we've been babes in the woods at the beginning, not knowing what to read next. And we wish that we had someone who could, you know, help us find the way and get to the books we want to read and not be confused and feel out of the loop. And so I think the good amongst the comics fans try to facilitate that and help people out.
Cool. I think, let's see, you were smart. You did bad first. I mean, thought of a good one. No. I mean, I could easily say, I say about the same thing if I was to say what's the worst thing about it. But, and that's probably it, is that a resistance to change because of an ownership of something and therefore very little new or different cracks surface, and so therefore books that sort of push that boundary don't seem to be as successful as we want. I'm going to go a different way and just say I think on the whole a lot of the people buying comic books are way more into the properties and characters than they are into the craft going into what they're doing. I think we talk about artists and people a lot of time. You know, the fact that John Paul Leon is drawing an issue of Detective Comics should be a really big deal. That thing should sell through the roof. That thing should sell like a Jim Lee issue sells because he's that good. But I don't think that a lot of people end up, I don't think a majority of people end up understanding the craft well enough to appreciate that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't like that. I think that I've spent this whole time that we've been doing comics learning how comics work, learning what's good about comics, learning, you know, what makes great comic book art, a great craft. And that's the part that I love and appreciate the most. And it kills me that more people don't appreciate that. I'm not saying that there aren't those who do and everybody likes their own thing and tastes are subjective or whatever, but there are some things that I was like, it's just so good. And I don't know why everyone doesn't understand this. You know, I wish people could understand things the way, you know, like as you keep going, you just get to be a better and better reader and you can sort of see what's going on. That, when I say it, it sounds like a kind of a snobbish answer. But there's just so much good craft going on. And I think there's so few people who can understand it in a way that, like, it's like when pros complain about reviews, which is ridiculous, by the way. Like there's just, it's such a strange art form and it's so subjective and it's so unique from anything else that to really sort of like, once the light clicks on what's happening with it, it's impossible to turn off. And if you're really just focusing on the machinations of what's happening to Green Lantern this week, I don't think you get that as much. But that's, you know, that's to everybody's different thing about how they enjoy something or whatever. I wish more people like that. I mean, the best thing about it, I mean, you nailed it. Like, it's like, people love this thing. They put their all into it. There's so few comic book people left. Really? I mean, like, I know the industry is growing or whatever. There isn't. There's, you know, like, we're not filling in the ranks of those of us who are going to be dying off at all, really, relatively speaking. So like the people who are buying comics are totally supporting the industry. Like they're the ones keeping everything alive, and so, and like no one's letting go. They're holding on there, which is sort of the flip side of that ownership thing, which is the good side of it. You know, like there's a very small group of people keeping this entire industry afloat, you know, because of their passion and their love for the things that make it up. And I think that that is really commendable. It's really interesting. And, you know, it's still comic book culture, the stories, the characters, all that stuff. That's still that's a bigger thing. But really comic books themselves, people who read comic books, people who you know, go to the shop or, you know, read the panels or whatever. It's a very niche thing. Most people still don't do that. You few, you mighty, you are stalwart, and we appreciate you because you make everything possible. So there.
It's heavy.
Yeah, it's true, though. If you want to write to us, you can do so at contact@ifanboy.com, or you can leave a voicemail at 888-FANBOYS, which is 326-2697. If you are leaving a voicemail, tell us who you're from, wait, who you are, where you're from, and you know, try not to keep it a rambling mess. Like what I just did, rambling mess. Don't do that. Don't be like me.
So, so some announcements. So some other podcasts you can find on this year feed. Connor and I talked about the Gotham pilot. Sometime in the future, we may talk about how we feel about further episodes, but we're not going to do a podcast for each and every episode. So we're just covering each of these pilots as they come out, because there's a ton of new comic book shows on TV. It's all over the place, all over the dial, as they say. And next week, you will see a podcast about the Flash pilot. Mm-hmm. And I'll just say it was good.
Was it?
It was good. I enjoyed it.
Okay. I'm not asking you any more about it.
And then at some point, you know, in time for Constantine, we'll reconvene for that and talk about that. As Josh mentioned, I also have a new comic book site called panels.net, which just launched. And the feedback has been very kind and warm. And I'm very proud of my team for putting together a very pretty looking site, I must say.
Nice looking.
It is a nice looking site. It works. Haven't been too many bugs. So, Everything's been smooth sailing. So hope you'll check out panels.net, and we'll have a podcast coming up in a few weeks.
It'll be okay, I'm sure. No, I don't want to go on forever. I want to be effusive. I'm super proud of you. Good job. You're just at the beginning, and it's going to change and morph into a thing and like begin to fit and be more than it is. And you're going through a thing that reminds me of what was probably one of the best times of my life. So good luck and enjoy it.
Well, of course, wouldn't be possible without you guys. So thank you very much. And we're going to have some fun.
Well, all right then. So as we get going, head over to ifanboy.com. You can comment on this show, previous shows, things like that. Look up the old stuff that we used to put up there. We can talk about this week's books, and you can find the other podcasts that we were talking about. Social media me.
And you can follow iFanboy at twitter.com/iFanboy and facebook.com/iFanboy. You can follow us all individually, C.S. Kilpatrick, Fuzzy Typewriter, Jeff Cannata, and J.A. Flanagan.
You know what? Follow Jeff. He just got married. You're going to see all sorts of shots from what looks like the most amazing honeymoon in Italy ever. So good for him.
He's on adventures. He's a good guy. Finally, if you dig this kind of thing, you can write us a review on iTunes, or better yet, tell your friends about us. Introduce your mom to podcasts. Help us spread that iFanboy love all over the universe.
My mom doesn't even have like broadband, so I don't think she's listening.
Okay.
Well, my wife's never listened either, so why would she?
Does she know you do a podcast?
Oh, yeah. So you're going to be doing that when? We're doing it tonight. So you're going to come to bed really late? Yeah, I am. I'm sorry. She's not. The character of my wife is so much worse than my actual woman, by the way. It's just like classic, like honeymooners type comedy about marriage. It's terrible. But she's not going to listen, so I can say whatever I want. I could say really nice things. She's not going to know that either. She's a wonderful mother and wife.
She would have
get
to
off.
Be.
Just get everybody. Just get off my back, please. Please.
Before Josh gets in any more trouble, that's it for this week's show. Thank you all for listening. I'm Paul.
I'm Connor. That doesn't sound like him. I can't do a Connor. I'm not going to try. I'm Josh.
It's the great irony and the great tragedy.
Yeah,
it you do is. All these different celebrities. You can't do a Connor.
Nope, I can't do a Connor. I can't do any of you guys. I couldn't do Ron. Connor's not distinctive enough. I can't get a thing about it.
We're all just
but he is
vague.
Distinctive. He is distinctive though, but I can't.
In different ways.
I guess I don't know.
Not in his voice.
Maybe I just don't have the talent for it.